This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I think you're the first Aston Villa player to play at a major tournament for England since Gareth Southgate. What does that tell us about what is happening at Villa now, and how long do you think it will be before you're lining up next to Jack Grealish in an England shirt?
I don't know. To both of them questions, I mean. The first one, Aston Villa, yeah, we are in a good time at the moment. We're enjoying some success and some stability on the pitch after a few up and down years, but I wasn't aware of that fact about me being the most recent player to play for England at a major championship since the manager, but that's nice. And in terms of Jack, I don't know. I knew it wouldn't be long before I was asked about him.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of My Old Man Said. It is time for the My Old Man Said spin on the Euros. Bring some sanity into the equation, into the discourse of discussing what we've seen so far. Joining me, Mr. Chris Budd and Mr. Phil Shaw. Welcome.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Hello.
All right. I saw you actually at the weekend while Wales were playing. We were paying homage to our Welsh brothers by climbing up their biggest mountain.
Yeah, you made it 6 foot whatever, even taller, so well done.
For a moment there, my head was the tallest
point in Wales
and England. I'm quite proud of that achievement.
We did well. Bloody early start, though.
Yeah, don't tell people. I actually got up at 4 a.m. in the morning. No, nobody would believe that. Nobody would believe that. So we have a legitimate reason to talk about the Euros. Well, mainly because we know more about football than most of the Muppets that are talking about it. But also there's a Villa connection as well. We have two players in the England team and Sir John McGinn in the Scotland team. So
and the mighty Lovre Kalinic on the bench for Croatia. That's the most important one.
Well, we're not going to dwell too much on him. But yeah, it's just a straight up Euros bing bang bosh. We'll obviously focus on the England and then go into the rest of the tournament. This is recorded after, I think the last game before this was recorded was Spain versus Sweden. So you know where you are.
Decent looking ball for Phillips. Got past one, then two, then plays it into Sterling! That will do nicely!
Right then, let's get into this, because I've some of the drivel I've been reading on social media is unbelievable. Just whining about Southgate, whining about no Grealish.
It's like you're allergic to happiness. That's what it is.
But also, it's like this, you know, agenda against Grealish. Well, let's remind people of perhaps why Grealish wasn't featuring in that first game. First of all, he's barely fucking kicked a ball in the last 3 months. Meanwhile, the likes of Sterling and Foden were winning league titles. Mason Mount was lifting the Champions League. and Grealish has had an ongoing injury that they've kind of rushed him back. I mean, that's why he played a full 90 minutes against Austria. If Southgate's got an agenda against him, he wouldn't fucking pick him. I think he's getting Grealish in there on the off chance that he's going to get fully fit, and that was why he gave him that full, because most people would have given him 45 minutes or whatever against Austria, but he gave him the full 90 because he wanted to get him up to fitness. And he's obviously thinking, well, one eye on the World Cup as well, because the experience of this tournament's only going to make Grealish better in the future as well. And you know, these things come thick and fast, and the World Cup will be upon us soon. But he has a role to play in this tournament.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of selection, I mean, I looked at the starting lineup and I mean, everyone was a little bit baffled, but I wasn't necessarily surprised at the Grealish one. My big one was sort of, you know, when you've got a Champions League winner and Luke Shaw, probably one of the most informed players in the league at left back, you thought, why would you play a right back at left back? I mean, Trippier did okay. I don't necessarily think he'll play all the games there, but I would understand the reasoning. And Southgate explained that he wanted the experience there and a sort of a steady back four because he was missing, you know, Maguire, who's probably the talisman at the back, and whatever anyone else thinks. So you want a bit of continuity, don't you?
You've got that set piece threat as well from Trippier as well. Yeah, that was the... I just assumed there was some kind of injury going on there. Same. But in terms of... I mean, let's talk just Grealish at the moment. You've got an aging Croatia team and it's fucking hot as well. So one thing you don't want Croatia... Because Croatia, you know, were still the World Cup finalists last time out. So they're no schmucks and they're, you know, the main threat before we go into this tournament, before we've seen, you know, the teams play of this group to England. And, you know, an aging team, you're going to put pace up there on the front to make them think, to make them cautious, to make them not commit so many people forward or, you know, to get above themselves. So I expected Sterling to play. And, you know, newsflash, before this game, Sterling has scored 12 goals in his last 16 games. You're picking him above anybody. I mean, what's, you know, how does Grealish compare to that? He doesn't. You know, how does any player compare to that? He doesn't. And he's got the pace to make Croatia think as well.
There's a big thing with Southgate, and he talks about it a lot, doesn't he, of trust. You know, he sort of backs the guys who he's played before and have delivered for him before.
And that sort of shows why there is no agenda against Grealish, because if that was the case, Jesse Lingard would have been first name in the team sheet, because, you know, he's performed for Southgate every time he's played for him, and he's left at home.
And actually, in the qualifiers, if you look back at the highlights, there's a heck of a lot of goals being scored by one Ross Barkley. And Dele Alli was featuring, so, you know, Southgate's left some pretty heavy hitters out of the squad. Recently, he's gone on form. Jack is deservedly in the squad on form, and he will get game time on form. But he's not the main man that people seem to think he necessarily is. I think he can have a big impact for England, absolutely. But
you've got to look at also tournament football. I mean, tournament football does not work. The first game, it's your best 11, and that's it.
No.
I mean, you just go through. David Platt, for example, his World Cup 1990, he is synonymous with that World Cup. He didn't actually start until the quarterfinal.
No.
Came on as a sub in the second game.
You know, you got Owen and Beckham. They didn't start
against
the first
Holland.
Game in 98, did they? Owen came on in the Romania game in the second one. Beckham obviously had big moments later in the tournament.
I mean, you know, Owen's goal against Argentina, you know, that is him coming on. It's not him starting the first game of the group stages. And, you know, Platt, second game, when he came on for Brian Robson against Holland, and, you know, I remember as a Villa fan, you're going, get him on because he's better than most of these schmucks. It's almost the same position as we are now as Villa fans. You were thinking, look, England, if you seriously want a chance in this, get him on.
Even in terms of form, I mean, you look back to Euro 96 and Shearer hadn't scored for England for over a year, had he, before that first game against Switzerland, which we drew in a rather unconvincing way. You know, you look at the number of tournaments. I mean, this is the first time we've won our first game in a Euros ever against a pretty good side. It was a case of, I think, get it done by whatever means possible, really, in the first game. You put the points on the board, well done.
But people are so, you know, it's depressed about beating Croatia in the first game. And, you know, I don't know how the fuck they're going to handle 1988 when England got beat by Ireland in that first game where they were one of the favourites.
Can you imagine the Twitter reaction many years ago when we went a goal down after, like, was it 15 seconds or something against San Marino? Can you imagine what the reaction would have been to that?
But in tournaments, also famously 1986, people depressed against beating Croatia. I remember really being depressed when Brian Robson went off injured. England lost their first game against Portugal in 86 in Mexico, and you just thought, ah, shit, we're fucked. Then you thought, ah, we're going to beat Morocco because, back in those days, nobody really paid the African teams any respect. I mean, in many ways, it was like 86 and onwards that they started to really, make a name for themselves. Next game against Morocco, you're expecting to beat them. Ray Wilkins gets sent off 0-0. And you're thinking, all right, we've lost our midfield now. Our original first 11 midfield, Wilkins and Robson's gone, and we've got to beat Poland or else we're out. And that was real high stakes stuff, and that was depression. And that was like losing, that midfield actually formed as the tournament went on. And, that was a half-decent team in terms of they were so close to beating Argentina. And, if it wasn't for Maradona, I think if Brian Robson was still playing, I don't think Maradona would be waltzing past him in the midfield as he went on his little mazy run. Teams and players come through the tournament, and that is where, Grealish has a chance.
The first game of the tournament means nothing. I mean, I can't think of a team that has started a tournament blitzing the first game and then just went all the way through, beating every team easily the whole way through. I mean, traditionally, like, the team that doesn't start well gets to the final. I mean, you only need to look at Italian teams. Argentina in 1990, you remember that first game against Cameroon when Caniggia was assaulted three times in the match. I mean, they lost that. They got right to the final. I mean,
Italy 82 drew their three group games against Cameroon, Poland and Peru and just looked like nobody's managed to win it.
Yeah.
I mean, so in the context of... people going, look at Italy, look at Holland. And I watched, I watched the England game and I thought, this is interesting because that was quite comfortable. And we had it in control, and he played the right players at the right time. People crying because Grealish, Rashford came on instead of Grealish. It was like, well, they're going to have to chase the game now. So you put more pace on to give them, to give them something to think about and to catch them on the break. It was obvious. Tiring, it's hot, it's near 30 degrees pitch side. It just all made sense what Southgate was doing. And it was just these, partisan claret and blue just wanted to see Grealish. Yeah, I wanted to see Grealish. But the bigger picture is this is a team that he put out. The Trippier thing, okay, he explains it, but it doesn't seem logical to me in terms of balance or whatever. But the rest of it, I had no real problems.
And in terms of getting your claret and blue fix, let's give credit where credit's due. Mings had a really good game.
Yeah, no, he was great. And that
represented our club fantastically. And
there was people queuing up Villa fans and other fans to give him a good bashing if he fucked up.
Yeah, and he, I thought he was really solid. Really solid. Kept it very simple. I don't necessarily think it was the hardest game he's had, let's be honest, but I think everything he had to do, he did really well.
Yeah, I mean, looking at some of the other potential opponents, like the Czechs, big team, I fancy Mings against them. It's a physical battle, isn't it?
And also, I think in terms of the way football has gone and in terms of like the way a John Stones plays, he's a ball-playing centre-back. Sometimes you just need someone who just does defensive stuff. He heads the ball well. He could put it in Rosette if needs be.
That England centre-back pairing just reminded me of the Villa pairing. It's Mings attacks everything. He's the front line of the defence in terms of that back four. And Stones is pretty much in the Konsa position. He sweeps up if need be. Just read the game as it unfolds behind Mings as he goes to meet the danger, and away you go.
And Mings is vocal. I mean, I heard that even in the friendlies. Mings isn't a senior England player yet, or even necessarily particularly established at that level, but you heard it in, I think it was the Austria game.
Croatia game.
Yeah, you can hear him, like, he's constantly chirping all through the game. He encourages his team.
Pointing as well.
Yeah, he marshals his defence. It's good. So I think if Villa fans can take that as a big positive.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing about you can say about Mings is, even if he does have, I mean, he has the odd lapse in concentration, it doesn't affect the rest of his game. Mings can carry on the rest of his game as if that lapse in concentration doesn't happen. Yeah. The camera always usually pans to his face and he just gives it this look like,
he's
no
worries.
He's a
confident guy, I need to be fair.
Yeah, because they were all giving them stick about that shoulder barge on the Austrian. And he just turned around and goes, well, it was a friendly, wasn't it? Didn't matter. And you would get away with it?
No, he said, I knew there wasn't VAR.
Yeah.
And that's why he did it, got away with it. And that's what that's the kind of thing you want, because I think he said in that interview, and you know, as we've always said, you just look around how the rest of Europe plays this game, and Chitauri is up there. You know, the Portuguese, the Spanish, they will play, you know, they will use every dark art possible to make sure they win, because winning is the end game.
And and to carry on the theme of sort of shithousing, doff our caps to Calvin Phillips. I mean, the amount of times he just gave away little niggly free kicks in and around the middle of the park, broke the Croatia game up, somehow didn't get booked. Fair, or if not I can remember, got booked. And he just thought, he's done his job really well. He deserved, you know, to get his assist, made the goal for Sterling really well. But actually, in that deep-lying role, I thought him and Rice did really well.
He wasn't playing deep-lining alongside him.
He was playing like a number eight,
yeah. I mean, that was his role. And that, and I wanted to get onto this, that was the main thing. You know, you look at England last tournament and you're thinking, there's something missing here, that I didn't feel legitimately that we could win this tournament. And when I saw Phillips playing where he was, and he was almost like meeting them in their own half, and you know, they had to get past him before they could think about launching any kind of attack. He was kind of closing them down, but also getting forward as well. And he's useful. He set up the goal, for example.
He did really well for the goal.
He had a good volley as well.
I started to think this could be the difference that actually gives almost like a throwback Brian Robson kind of character. I don't know if he's got as many goals in his game, but this is a bit of toughness that could give England an advantage in these games, even against, you know, the better teams. You've got to remember, at the end of the season, Leeds were beating Manchester City, Manchester United taking points off Liverpool, all those teams that we were ahead against and we couldn't close out and we lost the games. Leeds were taking points off. They didn't get beat by any of these teams, the top teams. And you're thinking, well, one of the reasons has to be because Phillips is in their team. And that's what gives me hope. If we do play the Germans and the, you know, Portuguese, Phillips is somebody that might give us a bit of a stronghold in the midfield. And that's what I thought, actually, this England team might do something. The way they've kind of dealt with Croatia with a minimum of fuss, and a lot of it is down to Phillips.
And pragmatism. You know, I mean, we all want to see, we all know that, you know, we've got amazing attacking flair, but you kind of have to harness it in the right way. And sometimes you have to be pragmatic against a team like Croatia, who, let's be honest, have still got one of the best ball-playing midfield players in the game at the moment. Who they didn't, fortunately, but they could have just pulled us apart. You saw little glimpses where they could play through our lines and you thought, okay, they can do this. But actually, England held their defensive shape really well, because they generally always had maybe probably six players behind the ball, and they let those front players like Foden, Sterling, kind of try and get in behind. I mean, if we did, obviously, you know, Foden hit the post, Sterling had a couple of good breaks. I don't think Sterling had an amazing game, but I thought he was a willing runner, did his job well. And
Foden goes in, that, you know, Sterling set that up.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sterling, I think he was very involved in the game. I mean, sometimes people have problems with Sterling's first touch. It's lacking a little bit, you know, technically at times, but I don't know. I think that he was on Croatia's mind all the time. I had, you know, no problem with him at all. It was quite funny in that interview when the woman asked him, do you think he earned his place? And he went, huh?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a bit kind of condescending.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's say it again. That is now 13 goals in his last 17 games. You can't argue against that. You can't say he's shit.
Great record.
You pick him every time with that bloody record for a game like that against Croatia. Now, where Grealish comes in is against, he will see some of the action against Scotland, I'd imagine, just because I think, although Scotland now have to come forward. I think if they got something against the Czechs, they could have sat back a bit more. And that's where, you know, Grealish is coming in to play 100%, whether it's from the bench or he starts. I think against the Czechs, if we deal with Scotland, then we're through. And then I think Southgate will make some changes. So I'd expect probably Grealish to start that game.
Mm-hmm.
Just be patient with the old Grealish.
Well, like you said before, it's tournament football. I mean, you can sort of like draw two parallels. Southgate's playing tournament football at the minute. Would you rather have Tim Sherwood managing England? I mean, it might be a more entertaining game, but you're not going to go further than the, you know, the group stages. You're going to be like Holland.
Yeah, you know, it's all very good and well having, you know, attacking fireworks, and it's great. At some point, England are going to need to show some attacking prowess, but ultimately it's about winning.
But Grealish, you may or not know if you support Aston Villa, that he's been out for 2-3 months with a shin injury, and even in the friendlies for England in the run-up to this, he's been ice packing up his shins as soon as he comes up. So do you think really he can play 3 group stage games, you know, one after the other, and then play the knockout ones? Do you think he's ready for that? I wouldn't really think so, you know, with those shin problems. So, I mean, Southgate's not stupid here.
And also it's tactically having him in games when you can get the best out of him, when you know, when the, you know, the game is set up for him. Was I think, you know, we're sort of 10-15 to go in a game that you're sort of holding him at arm's length pretty well. I don't think that's necessarily the point of the game. You know, like the not so illustrious rivals down the road will have been really proud with Bellingham's performance. So I thought he came on, and at that point in the game, that was the right change for me, because it just gave you that little bit of energy in the middle of the park to just close it out. He put his foot in when he needed to, and he can carry the ball well.
And people are forgetting as well that if you looked at the time in the second half where it did go a bit flat, Southgate sent Jack out to get warmed up. I mean,
and then Sterling scored, wasn't it? It was coming.
Yeah, there was every chance that he could have brought on Grealish if he was needed. But like I said, Sterling and Phillips combined for that goal, got the job done. And then, you know, the game scenario changed. It was like, right, well, you need to bring on different players now.
Yeah, I just think there's a lack of respect to Southgate, and there's this selfishness that people just think this tournament's just about watching Grealish play, when it's actually about England winning the damn thing, and you play your squad to achieve that. And at the moment, A, you're not surprised that Grealish isn't there straight away, because he is still got an ongoing shin problem. He's been out the last, you know, 2-3 months. So if that was a player from another team, you'd be thinking, you know, hang on a minute.
Well, Jordan Henderson's been out the same amount of time. I didn't see anybody crying for him to play.
Yeah, but it's not as, you know, this the problem. You know, what you got to realise also is Grealish has a lot of competition. Some of the best players in the Premier League are his competition in this England team. So it's not as if you're losing anything dramatically by not playing Grealish. It's, you know, he will be used when the moment arises.
Bearing in mind, you got another cracking player who didn't even make the bench in Sancho.
Yeah.
Sancho and Chilwell, who were, you know, Chilwell's just won a Champions League, wasn't even in the match day 23, and neither was Sancho. So we're not exactly short of options here. I think there's going to be interesting use of the squad, I'm sure, because I think Southgate will be looking at it, as you said earlier. Go and beat Scotland and you're through. I mean, to be honest, get a draw against Scotland and you're through in the way the group seedings and stuff work. In terms of the, you know, the top three sides and all that, I mean, your goal difference. So I think he's going to have to manage his squad. He'll know from their workloads and that through the season where they're at physically, because they're constantly testing these players with all the, you know, they've got analytics coming out of their arse, haven't they? They know everything about every player's, you know, how they're recovering and et cetera, et cetera. So he'll know when he needs to bring someone in or bring them out or manage them a bit, or they'll pull them back in training, et cetera. You know, as you said, they're not stupid. They've got some of the best sports science in the country.
So when Grealish is coming off a long-term injury and it is something that needs ice packs on his shin after every game, it's not realistic to see him playing every blood, you know, like how many games, 5, 6, 7 potentially games within, you know, a matter of 2 or 3 weeks. So don't be worried that he hasn't played the first bloody game.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
One thing that I liked about this, where we alluded to it, but England looked organised. And, you know, there's people saying, oh, we didn't look as good as like teams like the, you know, Italy or Holland.
Holland were appalling at the back.
Holland all over the place. I mean, Ukraine showed them so much respect. And then when they decided, oh, shit, we're 2-0 down, we better do something about this, scored two goals pretty swiftly.
And easily. I mean, the first one's a corker, isn't it? But the header from the free kick, the second goal, the equaliser, it's just shocking defending. Even the first one, really, it's crap defending.
But the comparison was England's was almost a comfortable, calculated win, while Holland were just like, didn't look organised. I mean, you know, Frank de Boer, he's only had a few months. He hasn't been able to, there's big questions marks against him, you know, over his head, considering some of his previous managerial reigns. Dutch fans flew a plane over the training ground, didn't they, with a banner, Frank, play 4-3-3, which is the Dutch way, because he was tinkering with like a five. And I think he kept to his own philosophy. But I would be more happier as a England fan than a Dutch fan, put it that way.
It's nice just to quietly go about our business. You can draw a line of the first game, tick, done. On to the next one, and then on to the next one.
Yeah, but it's more than that. It's momentum. It's not momentum. It's none of the cliches. There's something solid about it. There was something solid about it.
I think that's momentum because it's something to build on. I think if we'd have won sort of 4-0, blown them away, everyone would go, right, game over, we're winning this. I don't think anyone's getting too carried away, but we kind of think, well, okay, we can. There's something to build on here, and we've got foundations. As you said, it's solid. Now let's sort of exert ourselves a bit more against the Scots, where it'll be, you know, we won't be playing in 30 degree heat.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you just get through the group. That's the always the goal.
Of which you don't need to do very much to get through your group in this tournament this year.
Like, as a relative neutral looking at England in this tournament, you won the first game against your supposedly hardest opponents, and you barely broke sweat. I mean, you can't complain.
And you didn't play a lot of the cards you still have up your sleeve as well, which is, that's another thing. Southgate's got cards up his sleeve that he hasn't even played yet. One of them, the initials J and G, I think. The other home countries, let's talk about John McGinn.
Tough afternoon. Tough afternoon for him, really.
I mean, the Czechs back and let them have a go, let Scotland have a go at them. And you just saw that they just didn't have that kind of
I heard a really interesting I heard an interesting little phrase that will probably get used a bit more. I'll certainly take it on board. And they're called the Czechs had tournament craft, which I quite liked. You can tell they've got that little bit more experience in a tournament game to just, you know, be a little bit more clinical when you get the chances, not overexert yourself and get the job done.
Relatively young team, though.
Yeah, because the Scots looked nervy and kind of forced it a bit.
And they looked quite physically big, the Czechs, actually. I mean, normally they're quite tidy and, different generations of Czech teams have been quite tidy and nifty, but this team looks a bit more set-piece orientated and not to be trifled with.
What a goal, by the way, for the second one.
Oh, yeah, no, it was great
finish. I mean, the first one's a brilliant header. I just think, I think it was a very much a damp squib for the Scots. You know, they went into this game and I thought they'd actually get the win in this one. I thought the fans might carry them over the line. I just think the Czechs,
not enough fans,
they scored at just the right time. So they got the goal just before half time, not stuffing out of them once. Scots started well in the second half. They got the second and it just, after that second goal, the Scots kind of huffed and puffed a lot, but they, for all their sort of effort and energy or whatever, they just lacked quality in either penalty area.
They could have played till 10 p.m. and they wouldn't have scored.
Yeah, they kind of floundered a little bit. And then the Welsh, you know, I mean, they got the draw, but I didn't even bother watching them. I'm not that bothered. It doesn't seem a particularly exciting Welsh team, this one.
I saw a good bit of the Wales game and it was they put almost all the effort they had into getting the draw in that game, which when you compare to how they performed in the last Euros, you know, Wales had something to tank, but you have Aaron Ramsey has hardly played and he's struggling through. Gareth Bale, again, he's just not the Gareth Bale that he used to be.
I mean, the question is, they just need to raise their game once against Turkey, I think. And Turkey, I expected more from Turkey, I must admit. I thought they were going to, I thought they potentially could give Italy a rough ride, but Italy just squatted them aside.
They didn't even really have a go either, which was strange. They kind of tried to park the bus, but didn't even do a particularly good job of that. And once the first Italian goal went in, it kind of all became a bit inevitable.
Because, you know, they've got some players in their team and got legacy. They've got to the semi-finals of a World Cup before. So they shouldn't be this kind of park the bus minnow mentality, really.
Just a generational thing, perhaps. But I mean, what's your guys' view on the overall sort of start to the tournament? It's kind of been a bit of a strange one, it feels. It doesn't feel like a tournament to me.
No, I mean, it loses its edge just by not being hosted in one country, I think, because you're missing out on the culture and...
It certainly lacks an identity, doesn't it? It just feels like a bunch of games scattered around, which, of course, is exactly what it is.
But it's like the UEFA Nations League or whatever it is.
And this weird dynamic of certain teams have a home advantage and others don't. You know, Italy, England, Holland, Spain are all playing their games in their own country.
Yeah,
other teams
bullshit,
are having to travel abroad. It's just bizarre.
It's, I mean, the whole idea of being a host is you have advantage, and that just should be one host, not like a bunch
four
of teams.
Four or five host teams.
Yeah, I've got a you know, seriously better advantage over most teams. It's
especially at this one where, you know, it isn't like, say, for example, where if England go anywhere away from home, especially in a tournament, you know you're going to be pretty much 50-50 anyway because of England's travelling support. This one, like, there was a few Czechs in the crowd, but an England game at Wembley at the moment is all England.
Yeah, although, you know, it's not the same without full crowds. Other teams we've seen so far, and we have still got actually one group. We haven't seen the group of death yet, which Hungary's going to win.
Yeah, I mean, I am interested. I think the Germans generally are pretty workmanlike, but this doesn't look like a vintage German side. I think the French, everyone is tipping them to be there or thereabouts. So I'm interested to see their game just to get a gauge of where the French are at.
I think Portugal are a tip for going deep in the competition as well.
They could probably be that side that potentially could finish third in their group, but could cause some damage from that position there. One of those ones that nobody wants to get drawn against.
I think Portugal will beat Germany.
Mm-hmm. We definitely don't want them in penalties anyway. Fernandez and Ronaldo in the team.
No,
you're missing something about Germany. You see, Joachim Löw has had he's had to recall Müller, he's had to recall Hummels. You know, he's backed down. I heard one German pundit say that they spent 3 years getting it wrong before going back to the tape, and since they went back to tape, they haven't lost. So they might do better than we think.
Certainly have some experience there, won't they?
Yeah, I saw them get beat by Holland in one of the qualifiers, and I just thought, this is not.
Did they lose to North Macedonia?
Yeah, they did indeed. So, I mean, people always write off the Germans going into tournaments, as Lineker likes to say. But this isn't like one of those where the top two go through easy because the other two teams are crap. This is a proper group. You got three teams there. Well, Hungary are going to win it, but you got three teams there that might get into the final.
Yeah. Well, they'll certainly all have aspirations to be at the business end of the tournament, won't they? Depending on the draw they get. But.
That is the only... I mean, Croatia... I mean, I'm quite interested in Croatia-Czech game because then you'll get a better gauge of how good England's win was and what kind of Croatia team. Is this a yesteryear tournament too far, Croatia, or what? But, yeah, I can't see anybody in that Group C of Austria, Netherlands, Ukraine, Macedonia doing any damage deep into this tournament. And Belgium, of course, are a good bet, and you wouldn't want to play them at any stage of this tournament.
And having watched the Spanish, they are, you know, just like the heavy hitters over there, you know, Barca and Real, they look like a bit of a very much a golden generation of Spanish football has come to an end.
Yeah, well, they're lacking real star quality up front, I think.
Yeah.
The Italians, I think the Italians have got the spirit to become a force in tournament. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time they've done it.
Well, they've got a sort of a young, exciting team, and they seem to play with a bit more tempo and a bit more sort of pizzazz about them, which is very unlike traditional Italian teams in tournaments. Normally, they would be like a 1-0 specialist.
And I think they'll have too much for the likes of Wales and Switzerland.
comfortably.
So they'll cruise through that group. But, yeah, I mean, roll on the group of death, because that's the only one with real intrigue, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Poland did what they always do, disappoint.
Well, Lewandowski failed to turn up again.
Well, they never get the ball to him. He never touches the ball. Poland, historically, they normally have a great player, but it's when they've got two or three really decent players around that great player that they become a force. Like Boniek had Lotto and a couple of other guys that I can't pronounce, actually. This is going back, 74, 78, 82, and they were a real force. And probably, if Boniek wasn't suspended in the semi-final against Italy, would have probably beaten Italy, and history would be completely different. But they disappointed big time against Slovakia, and obviously got bloke sent off, and that pretty much ruined their chances of doing anything, and I can't see them doing anything. They'll probably beat Spain now after I've said that. But Sweden, never underestimate the Swedes. They do normally punch above their weights in tournaments, so they've got a good chance of progressing as well. One big plus of this tournament, though, and it brings back memories of when we were first introduced to VAR in other major national team tournaments, is, this is how VAR should be, isn't it? I mean, I haven't watched a game yet where there's been a big kerfuffle, or I've been sitting there waiting for 5 minutes to find out what the decision is, or this is just VAR how it should be applied, is it not?
Certainly with the handball stuff, the refs have got it absolutely spot on. That's because most games there's been an appeal gone up for a handball decision that clearly these players think they'd get in their league, or their domestic, whatever country they're from. And the refs have been really firm and just kind of stamped it out. Yeah. And I love how they've got this remit, haven't they, to stop players surrounding the refs. It's brilliant.
Yeah, the most difficult decision I've seen so far was the offside call in Ukraine versus the Netherlands. The decision was made, the game played on, and then you got shown the working out afterwards, which maybe that's the way forward. I mean, you don't need to see in the Premier League, you don't need to see the VAR working out in real time to see what's going on. Just tell us what the decision is, get on with the game, and then show why the decision afterwards.
Was that for TV audiences showing after?
Yeah, it must have been.
This is the thing, because you want transparency, because they said next season they're not going to show you how it's worked out, which is a bit, that sounds a bit fucking suspicious.
Yeah, but to go back to the referee, and I mean, even niggly fouls, there's plenty of times the referees are just waving the hand, get up again. There's no, the games are flowing a lot better.
Yeah, I think ultimately, though, in terms of referees, you wait until the first knockout stage, because that's when the tensions are a bit higher and players are kind of, let's say, applying the dark hearts a little bit more. But so far, that's a massive positive, actually.
Premier League, take note.
Yeah, but yeah, England, if Phillips develops in tournament and gives us that foothold in midfield,
he could be the surprise package.
Combination of Rice and Phillips could be the answer. I mean, problem is, if Henderson's knocking on the door, will Southgate be strong enough to say, well, these guys are doing great, so...
Yeah, that's the sort of... You could say the same about Maguire. If Mings and Phillips have another good couple of games in the groups, and then all of a sudden Henderson and Maguire are fit, and for the first knockout game, say he brings back Henderson and Maguire, or even one of them, and it goes wrong, I mean, he's just leaving himself open to trouble.
I do think, though, if Maguire is fit, I think he plays. Because I know Southgate seems to like him. He's one of the first names on the team sheet for him. So Henderson, maybe less so. I think he knows he's got guys he trusts in that position. I think certainly at centre-back, it's probably where England potentially are at their weakest compared to the rest of the field.
Yeah, I think you've got a problem with injuries. If you get into a centre-back, another centre-back goes down, then you might have a problem.
Because I don't think he really wants to play, a White or anyone like that. I think he'd probably play Kyle Walker as a centre-back over a couple of other guys, actually.
Was you surprised Walker started at right-back?
Nah. I think Walker's a cracking player.
Yeah.
I know he gets a little bit of stick every now and then, but I thought he defended well. He didn't have a particularly great game by his own standards. And Reece James.
There was one good moment where he shielded off that player,
He defended well. I just think with the ball, he was a little bit scrappy, but he's a good player. He gives you pace. It gives you an out ball, and I think he can recover well. And I think, again, with the fact that Trippier played at left back, he went with a bit of experience of guys who have done it for him in a tournament before. And obviously, Stones, Pickford, those guys, they played in the last World Cup.
people have issues with Pickford. I think he reminds me of a lot of, he's like a continental keeper when like an Italy will win the World Cup and you think, how the fuck did they win the World Cup with that fucking piece of shit goal? It's like it's like when there's a great team and they got a crap keeper but they still win the World Cup or the...
Kind of like when Spain had Casillas, you know, was a good goalie but he always had an error in him.
You know, like, you know, 82, Italy won the World Cup with, you know, 40-year-old Dino Zoft. It's like the trick is not to let the other team have a shot. That tends to work.
Yeah.
But I was looking at some highlights of the last World Cup and he made a couple of good saves there, like top draw saves.
Yeah. And his form at the end of the season was very good, actually. I remember when he played against the Villa, he made some cracking saves in that game.
Yeah, so I don't mind him because he can have an inspired game.
And the way we want to play, we need a goalkeeper with good distribution, which is actually one of the things I was going to say. One thing he necessarily didn't do particularly well was, and I think most people would have got frustrated by it, was if you're going to play the long ball game from the goalkeeper, don't bang it up to 5 foot fuck all Sterling, who isn't going to win anything in the air.
Yeah.
That was the only sort of little blot against Pickford, but I think his distribution is the best of the goalkeeper options we've got, and he seems to trust him. So again, if it's the Southgate trust game, he'll go with the guys who he knows will get the job done for him.
This is one final question. Is Harry Kane... There's two types of centre-forwards for me in international level. There's one that scores a shitload of goals in qualifiers, but then isn't that inspiration when it comes to the actual tournament? The man that gets you out of jail or scores a shitload of goals to get you through. Like, you know, Lineker would dig us out of holes. But Kane sometimes, I don't know. For me, I'm not 100% convinced, even though he's like, you know, probably the first name on the team sheet.
I think he needs a friend.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he kind of got a bit isolated, didn't he?
Because Sterling and Foden, although they're down as like forwards and attacking players, they're not going to help Kane. They're very much off him or past him. You know, he's got Son at Spurs that, you know, they're in tandem, the pair of them. I think Harry Kane's got visions on being like a number 10. That's probably where he's most comfortable because of all those assists he gets as well. So, but, you know, Calvert-Lewin or Watkins, if they'd have taken him, but even Rashford on maybe with Kane would help him.
Maybe Grealish helps Kane in certain respects.
Well, I thought Kane was actually unlucky not to get the goal, didn't he? He had that chance at the back post where they defended us, you know, incredibly to get the ball out. So I think if Kane has a quiet game, pops up and got the second goal, we'd have been saying, oh yeah, well, Kane does what Kane does, but there's obviously more to come from him and some of our other big players.
Such an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, Mason Mount was all right, and I think he will...
He'll grow into it.
Grow into the tournament and, you know, seem to be enjoying himself. Just, he was unlucky with that free kick, actually. Wasn't a bad effort. I feel like I've been starved from decent free kicks. It must be watching the Villa. So I think it's all good on the England front as we speak. Sometimes it's not good. It's not, you know, it's not great to bang a team 4-0 in the first game and get everybody giddy thinking they're going to win. I think this is everything I remember about tournaments. I feel a bit more warm inside about that comfortable 1-0 win against Croatia, a team that we haven't actually fared that well against in recent times.
No. Thoughts ahead of Scotland? Will he make changes? Will he stick with the same team?
I think we'll beat Scotland.
I think we should. I think if you lose that, if you don't win that game, I think the knives will be sharpened. And that's not because of the tournament context, but that's just because I think Scotland are not a good side. This one thing we've seen.
I think they're all right. I think they're all right. I think they're industrious. They're just lacking that star quality up the top.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that England team that started against Croatia had never played together. The starting 11 had never played together. I wouldn't be surprised if Southgate picks another 11 that hadn't played together for the next game. It seems to be approaches each game, you know, and he picks the tools to win that one game. And, you know, not thinking about the next ones.
But you're going to have to match Scotland for effort. So I think that's Phillips would be playing. I think Rice would be there in the middle. I can't see much change. I mean, I would...
He might actually start the same team, but just he'll use his bench differently because I think England are obviously, in terms of the strength and depth, it just blows Scotland out of the water in terms of what we can bring off the bench. But because I don't think they can bring anybody off the bench who can necessarily win them the game.
And that's the thing, we can keep bringing people off the bench until we win the game.
Yeah.
Especially with five subs.
Yeah. It's a shame we didn't have a sixth sub, then maybe Grealish might get a game. Right, on that note, and that was a joke, by the way, I think you'll see Grealish against Scotland.
Yeah, agreed.
I think it will. It will
That'd be fun to see him against McGinn, wouldn't it?
Yeah. What do you think of McGinn's performance against the Czechs? I thought it's
similar to some of his performances we saw for Villa at times in the season. To be honest, just, you know, lots of energy, huffed and puffed a bit ineffective. Would that be a fair reflection?
I think rough around the edges was how you described.
Yeah,
him.
It wasn't particularly like silky in possession, and not like neat and tidy. But he just gives you that snap and that bite. But sometimes you, at this level, you need a bit more than that.
Sometimes he's taking on shots where you know it's going to get blocked by the player in front of him, right? You know, maybe his decision making is a bit kind of.
I thought
rash,
Robinson had a good game though. I think he's obviously their star player, isn't he?
Yeah, they're going out. Right. On that note, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.